Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller, for this Thursday, March 16th, 2023. Very pleased to be joined by my guest today. She is one of the Swiss Army Knives of sports broadcasting in Canada. She is a co-host of The Morning Loop on TSN and the host of CTV's NFL coverage. And of course, I'm talking about Kara Wagland. Kara, welcome to the Isolation Series for the very first time.
Very first time. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's dive right in. Over the last couple of days, I cannot remember a time where the NFL offseason has got off to such a start. Money is flying everywhere. People are moving everywhere. It is unbelievable. I honestly cannot remember an offseason start like this for the NFL in the last 15 years or so. So my question to you is twofold. Number one, what is the most surprising thing for you so far over the last couple of days that has happened, other than Ezekiel Elliott, which I'm sure caught a lot of people off guard yesterday? And the second part of that is, with all of the early movement, what do you think about Mike Tomlin and your Pittsburgh Steelers not doing anything?
I mean, I don't know that I'd say we haven't done anything. They're slowly starting to heat up and make some moves. I of course, as a Steelers fan, would like to see more done, but I trust in Tomlin and we'll go from there. But it's been, I mean, look, the NFL has figured it out. They're 365 days a year. And I think every major sports league would like to mimic what, I mean, the NBA does a great job of it too, but they own the off season as well. Like, the free agent window has been unbelievable this week. It's been straight fire from the NFL the entire time. You're literally refreshing your Twitter feed all day long, being like, what's happening now? And the players just kind of buy into the drama. Like, I did SportsCenter last night and Aaron Rodgers announced on the Pat McAfee show his intentions to want to play for the Jets. And it's like, what are we even talking about right now? This is a player who's still under contract, who is putting his intentions out there that he wants his team that he's been with here for his career, who he's going to be a Hall of Famer for, who's, you know, all these things, his intentions to leave. And it's almost as though he enjoys the drama and we just all have a front row seat to it and getting to watch him, you know, manipulate and play and decide what he wants to do and go into the darkness and emerge from the darkness. And I'm like, this is just wild what we're getting to see here. I'm really interested to see how that situation plays out, because I have a funny feeling it's not going to be as cut and dry as just the Jets and the Packers come to some kind of agreement here. I feel like there's maybe a couple more hiccups along the road to come. You mentioned Zeke Elliott. That at first was a bit of a surprise, but then the more you kind of sit and think about that one, they had committed to Tony Pollard with how good Pollard was last year. Like, obviously everyone would love to have that dual threat out of the backfield like the Dallas Cowboys did last year, but with Zeke's injuries and things like that, he just hasn't performed as well as he has in years past. It's not all that surprising they needed to get that money off the books. What I'm kind of keeping an eye on now is the teams that haven't made huge splashes yet, but have restructured contracts like the Dallas Cowboys, like the Buffalo Bills, and created a ton of cap space. So you know something is coming. You know the Bills are about to make a splash. Is it going to be something like OBJ? You know the Dallas Cowboys are about to do something. You know they're going to look for a wide receiver. DeAndre Hopkins is out there. So right now I am literally on the edge of my seat, just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen, because I think there's some really big things still to come. The biggest shock to me, I think, is still the trade between the Panthers and the Bears for the first overall pick. Like, I just, what a great trade for the Bears. I don't really know what the Panthers are really thinking here.
To me, the Bears have won the offseason thus far with what they have been able to accumulate in like three moves is unbelievable. It's like watching the Queen's Gambit right now, you know? Obviously, we won't know how it plays out until the games start being played themselves next season, but you gotta tip your cap to the management office of the Chicago Bears that have said, you know what? We realize that we have a talented quarterback in Justin Fields. We just need to surround him with some good assets other than what we currently have. And now to have a wide receiver room that includes DJ Moore and Chase Claypool, who is a Canadian and a very talented young wide receiver at that, that is unbelievable to me.
Yeah, and I mean, Chase didn't have a great season or back end of the season after he was traded last year, but I do think he has that talent. He'll figure it out. With the Bears, adding DJ Moore is an unbelievable option for Justin Fields. And I do still think very much so with the additions that the Bears have made, they still have fairly stock shelves when it comes to draft picks as well. This next year, they're not going to necessarily compete, in my opinion, but they're going to get to see what they have in Justin Fields. And they're now surrounding him. They've strengthened their defense. They've done everything they need to do to give him the pieces. And now they're going to see this year, is this our guy? If this season doesn't work out with Justin Fields, and I do think that they're leaning towards the commitment of, yes, this is our guy. They're going to extend him. They're leaning that direction, but they have this season to figure it out. I don't think they're going to contend this season. But if it works out that he's not their guy and it's not working out the way they are, they still have some nice picks to work with for the 2024 draft where they can go and get a quarterback there. So the way they're structuring their team in this offseason, they're setting themselves up for some really good success. And who is there really to compete with in the NFC right now, and particularly in their division? So I think that you're absolutely right. So far, they've won the offseason and they've done a great job. I'm excited to see what the rest of the offseason holds.
Now, going back to Aaron Rodgers for a moment, I completely agree with you that that guy loves drama more than anybody does during their high school years at this point, I think. Going back to him showing his toe during the press conference a couple of years ago and everything like that, and the darkness retreats and everything that you already referenced, I agree with you that there's inevitably going to be a couple of hiccups along the way before we get any type of deal done. But don't you believe that because the Jets have acquired Aaron Lazard, who outside of Devontae Adams arguably was and is Aaron Rodgers' favorite target, and different things like that, that it's a inevitability that it does happen and that he now put it out there in the zeitgeist and on the airwaves with Pat McAfee? Now, granted, he goes on there every week and says 90% nonsensical stuff, and you have to weed through it and whatnot. But I do think that we will see Aaron Rodgers in a Jets uniform by the time the games are played next year. And on that same note, because they are setting themselves up with Aaron Lazard and they have Sauce Gardner and they have some great young receivers as well, and different things like that, could you see somebody like Ezekiel Elliott coming and joining that backfield just to solidify the backfield for Aaron Rodgers too?
I don't know that I see that as a landing spot. They have Breece Hall. I think they're pretty set up. I mean, I thought the Jets were a great team last year. I know they kind of, if you look at the start of their season, they were looking like they were going to be a playoff team and they were going to be maybe a contending team. Their defense is unbelievable. And then it kind of became very apparent about midway through the season that they were missing a quarterback, and that's where the hole was. Now that they've addressed that and they brought in Alan Lazard, who knows what else they do? I think the Jets, I don't really understand why a lot of people are coming out and saying they don't think the Jets are really going to be a contender this year. I think that all that the Jets were missing was a quarterback. And so, I mean, this is where it's going to get interesting, because if the Green Bay Packers choose to drag their feet on getting this deal done, it's not really setting Aaron Rodgers up for success and getting in with his team and starting to get the feel and starting to learn the offense and starting to do that. I mean, he's got his guy, Nathaniel Hackett, to work with again, which I don't really know why he's so excited about that. But if the Packers, he sees something we don't, I don't know. I mean, but look, some guys are just better OCs than they are head coaches. But if the quicker that he can, that this can get done, it can get resolved and he can start to move forward, I think the more successful he's going to be. But we do have to remember, yes, he's a four-time MVP, but he's also 39 years old, contemplating retirement. At some point, there's going to be a drop-off. And this could be the year. We don't know that. So there are still some question marks. He is still Aaron Rodgers. We'll see what happens. As far as Zeke, I like to throw this out into the universe and see what happens. Would that not be, I mean, there's rumors that he's going to go back to Dallas and just sign for less money. Who knows if there's any truth to that. Zeke in Buffalo? Buffalo needs a run game. They need to address that. They are clearing up cap space. I don't know. I don't know if that's where Zeke wants to land. He likes the spotlight. Maybe he wants a bigger market. I don't know. But, I mean, that could be an interesting fit.
I want to get your thoughts also on something that we've debated here on the Isolation Series over the last several weeks. And we know, as you mentioned off the top, that the NFL is a beast and they are a cash cow. And that is indicative of some of the numbers that we are seeing being thrown out right now. But I don't understand why a quarterback like Geno Smith would get a three-year, $105 million contract. No disrespect to Geno Smith. He had a great season, and he was a great story in the NFL last year. But this guy used to be a number one overall pick, and he couldn't figure it out for the vast majority of his career. And then he was lucky enough to be a backup to some great quarterbacks and then have a great year last year. But to me, it doesn't warrant $105 million. The fact that they are throwing out this type of money just as the average now, quote unquote, worries me a little bit, because it muddles up and misconstrues, you know, who the elite players are in the league now. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but like, again, Daniel Jones has had some great progression and everything like that. But Daniel Jones, but to me,
$40 million quarterback,
100%. So what are your thoughts on all of this?
I agree. I mean, I think Deshaun Watson kind of set the bar and really screwed a lot of NFL owners over, as did the ownership of the Cleveland Browns, giving him that money and giving it to him all in the guaranteed format. That really set the bar. And I think a lot of owners are trying to send the message that we're not desperate. Like, we're seeing it with Lamar Jackson. Now, that's a completely different case, and it's tough. There's a lot of layers to that. But a lot of ownership, like the Baltimore Ravens, are sending the message that they're not desperate like the Cleveland Browns. They don't need to give out that kind of money. But when you see guys like Daniel Jones coming out and being like, I want $40 million and getting it. When you see Geno Smith getting the money. Now, Geno's an interesting case. He's been with the Seahawks. He earned his starting position. I don't hate on Geno for getting his money. Maybe it's because I spend most of the season with Luke Wilson and he's a big Geno Smith guy. And so I hear all these lovely stories about Geno. And so I'm really just happy for him to get his bag. But I do think that a lot of quarterbacks are kind of getting money that they don't deserve. And then you look at Lamar Jackson and you're going, why not? Why not? What do the Baltimore Ravens think they're going to get that's going to be better than Lamar Jackson? And this whole process is just setting themselves up to fracture that relationship more. And then in a year or two, when they can't franchise tag him anymore, what are you going to do? You're going to get nothing for him and he's going to leave. Or why are there not more teams out there interested in trading for Lamar Jackson? Like, there aren't that many top tier, really good quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And I don't know, like, I look at the Baltimore Ravens and people are like, well, they could go out and they could get cheaper. They could draft a quarterback.
They're still very high on Tyler Huntley, and no disrespect to Tyler Huntley, but I haven't seen anything in any of Tyler Huntley's starts so far that have said to me, you know what, he's eventually going to get up to Lamar Jackson's level. I'm sorry, but that's just
Spencer,
the truth.
He's not Lamar Jackson. And even the hope of, well, we could draft a quarterback and bring someone else in, you're doing that with the hope that you get someone as good as Lamar Jackson. You have someone as good as Lamar Jackson. He's one of the top tier guys and he's young. And I know that there's questions around his ability to have success in the postseason and he's had injury concerns. Come on. But I agree with you. Like, the money that's being thrown around for quarterbacks right now, I think that the Deshaun Watson situation really screwed a lot of NFL owners. And now they're having to give out money that they don't want to give out.
Well, switching gears here for just a moment. Today is largely considered as Christmas part two for a lot of sports fans, as it is the first day of the NCAA official tournament. We had the last four play-in games over the last couple of nights and things like that. My question to you is, how many brackets have you done in preparation for this year's tournament, if any, and who are a couple of your sleeper teams that not a lot of people are talking about going into day one of the tournament?
So I'm probably going to give you an answer that you are not prepared for here. I have filled out zero brackets this year. I consider myself a very big College Hoops fan, or at least I was. Growing up, I was a huge Georgetown Hoyas fan. The team went, I think, 7-25 this year. It is not good for Georgetown. They finally let Patrick Ewing go. It's tough. I find the shift that's happened in college sports, in basketball primarily, over the last 6 years, five, 6 years, with the one and dones and the guys kind of coming and going, you can't really get invested in a team. It's becoming more and more difficult. And I find, like, my interest, and I was a huge College Hoops fan, my interest is starting to really wane. And it's disappointing because I do love the sport. I love the tournament. I will get into it once the actual official tournament gets underway and kicks off. And who doesn't love the heart that these guys put into it and these girls put into it and the buzzer beaters and everything coming down to the wire and the upsets. And it's amazing. But I find myself heading into it not wanting to do the deep dives that I normally do on teams and not really wanting to. I used to have a little side hustle where I would fill out people's brackets for them for money, because I had a pretty high success rate in winning bracket challenges. But I'm just not as motivated this year and in past years. I'd say the last two or three years, really, I more want to just sit down and watch the games and not worry about doing the research heading into it of, like, okay, who's going to be the sleeper this year? Who could have that, you know, 16 seed upset? Who could, you know, who's the Lehigh this year? That sort of thing. I just want to sit and enjoy it as a fan, enjoy it for what it is, which is an unbelievable tournament to see some young talent.
Obviously, as you can imagine, there's a lot of brackets and a lot of pools going on at TSN right now. And this is the first year that I'm not actually going to be a part of any of them. I don't think I'm going to put anything on it because I end up tearing up that bracket first week right now. And I hate to be a bit of a Debbie Downer because I do enjoy the tournament. I'll sit and enjoy it as a fan, but it just doesn't carry the same luster that it used to for me.
Okay, we will get you out of here on these last two things. Switching gears, I know that you are a big golfer. When you ever get a chance to get away from the kids and actually get to go and hit some balls and everything like that, we're coming off of the so-called fifth major to really kickstart into the Masters, which is in a couple of weeks' time. And of course, I'm talking about the PGA Championship that took place at TPC Sawgrass with the Island Green and all of that drama that it provided over the weekend. I want to get your thoughts on something that has been bothering me for a while, though.
Sure.
We all know that Tiger Woods still moves the needle in golf more than any other player or any other golf figure that they have in the PGA. That's just a fact of the situation. You know, we all like to watch the Tiger Red on the weekend and hope that we get to see him at least one more time or a couple more times, even at the age of 46, contend in the important majors and important tournaments. How realistic that is with him being as beat up as he is, at this point, the argument can be made that he needs my wheelchair more often than I do right now, but that's neither here nor there. But the other thing that bothers me is we still put Tiger on such a pedestal in the game of golf, and for what he did throughout the last 25 years in the game of golf. However, this guy doesn't care about his image seemingly at all anymore, because he still does dumb stuff like we saw a couple of weeks ago when handing a tampon to one of his people in his threesome or foursome or whatever it was, when he knows that there's hundreds of cameras on him at all times. I don't care if you're buddies with the guys that you're playing with. You just pick a time to do that if you are going to do that, which I don't recommend that you do that anyways, because that's just tacky. But what do you make of the fact that Tiger is still such a polarizing figure for the PGA and brings in more money, arguably, than any other player that they have at the top of their game, including the youngster Scottie Scheffler, who ran away with the PGA Championship this past weekend?
I mean, they're lucky the PGA has some unbelievable players on tour right now to watch, whether it be Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, JT. I mean, yes, they've lost some names to live, but I would argue the fact that they've been able to retain that kind of core with Rory McIlroy, they're still in very good shape. Look, Tiger's always going to be Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods has done so much for the game of golf. I don't know if you've watched the recent Netflix documentary that was out. I really enjoyed it. But the common thread throughout a lot of it is the Colin Morikawas and the Tony Finaus, and all referencing that Tiger Woods is the reason they got into golf and the reason that they pursued golf. And I mean, Tiger Woods is certainly the reason that I started watching golf a lot more and have developed the love for golf that I have, because everyone kind of wants to be like Tiger. And so I would argue that I don't know that he is that polarizing. I think that, does he get a level of forgiveness that other people don't necessarily get because of who he is? Sure, I think so. I think he does still care about his image to a certain respect, but I think he's also realized that he's created this persona for himself that is bigger than golf and bigger than sport. And he's just one of those names that he's kind of protected to a certain respect. I think that, no, I don't think that anyone will ever come along that will touch what Tiger has done. Like, it's sad that because of the injuries that he sustained, that he can't continue to compete at the level he was for longer, because the numbers that he was capable of putting up and the statistics and the records are boundless. And we're obviously not really going to see that anymore. He's already said he'll probably compete for the majors and a couple other tournaments here and there. But will he really compete? I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's anyone who knows Augusta better than Tiger does. So he always has that in his corner. But
would you agree with me, however, that if Tiger, I'm not saying that this would ever happen, but if Tiger could play a round of golf with a cart, that there would be no question that he could still compete? Because I thought to myself, largely this comes down to the fact that he cannot walk up and down the hills and things of a golf course for two rounds or three rounds, or if he even makes the cut and whatnot. But we do know that the shots are still in there. He can still swing the club. His short game is still good. I mean, obviously, he can't get down to read his putts as much as he used to be able to, because his leg is so badly messed up and different things like that, and he's lucky to have it. But do you think that if he was hypothetically able to go around the course in a cart, that he would be able to compete more because it would take the stress of walking the course away from him?
It's tough to say, because I don't think Tiger would ever give in to doing that. Even if he was allowed to, like, he's just the pride that's involved. He would just never do it. I think, too, what plays into it as well is because of the position that his body is in and the state his body is in, he probably can't play the same amount of golf or even practice that he would normally do. And so that's got to affect how fine-tuned you are and dialed in you are when you're actually competing. I mean, I think that the PGA Tour will forever find a way to get Tiger an exemption to get him into these tournaments, because he does move the needle so much and they need him there. He's such a big presence. And even considering, it's interesting to see, like, Tiger and McIlroy largely run the PGA Tour. They're the front-facing people. They're the loudest voices who weigh in when anything happens, when, you know, the LIV tournament started. And it was Tiger and Rory that you heard from the most. And considering how far down the rankings he is and where he's competing and how little he competes, that he still has that strong of a voice, speaks to just how big Tiger Woods is still in the game of golf. And I think he will continue to be. I think it will largely become kind of a legacy thing for him, where his main focus now is, sure, he has the competitive nature of Tiger. He's never going to go into a tournament and tell you, I don't think I'm going to compete. They still ask him every Wednesday heading into a tournament, do you think you can compete? And every time he says, of course, I wouldn't play if I didn't think I could compete. That answer will never change, whether he actually believes it or not. But I largely think he's heading into these tournaments knowing what he brings to the viewership and what he does for the game of golf by just being there. And I think that that's going to kind of become more of Tiger's role moving forward. And he deserves whatever role he's going to have, to be honest, with what he's been able to do for the sport. I'm good with that.
To your point earlier, though, I do believe that on April 6th, we could see him, you know, compete for the weekend and actually have a pretty good showing at Augusta. Because if you remember, I believe it was 4 years ago, he went into his first tournament in 2.5 years, essentially, and finished fourth at Augusta, because he knows that
he knows the course so well.
100%, so only time will tell. Before we leave the topic of golf, as I said, I know that you like to hit the links whenever you can and get away from the kids for a bit and hit the links. I am throwing out a challenge to you right now, and that is, before the end of the summer, you and I hit the golf course together and play around the golf together, because you haven't played a round of golf until you see me play in my custom cart that allows me to play from a seated position. And I would love to kick your butt from a seated position, because I've done it for a lot of people.
I would love to see that. I have no doubt you could kick my butt, because I feel like what you see on social media, because I actually swing the clubs a lot, people are under this impression that I'm a good golfer, and that is not the case. So I have no doubt that you could probably beat me. I say we bring Duffy out, we put together a foursome, and we have ourselves a day. That sounds fantastic.
Yes, at Copper Creek, you're one of the great courses around Toronto, but I will definitely set that up for sure. And we will get you out here on this. You're a baseball fan, as I am, and you were able to go to a spring training game just last week, if only for 3 innings. And the argument can be made that you were the bad luck charm, because that when the Phillies started to mount their comeback, but I digress. I wanted to get your thoughts. We know that the Blue Jays have had a couple of interesting years. They finished with 91 wins a couple of seasons ago, backed that up with one more win last year in the end with 92 wins. And then we should have won that second game, because we were up 8-1 heading into the seventh inning, and we all know what happened.
I was at that game. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, so was I. I wanted to get out of my wheelchair and throw my wheelchair out the damn stadium by the end of the game, but that's neither here nor there either. My question to you is, for the first time really since Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins came in to take over for Paul Beeston and Alex Anthopoulos, they really overhauled this team in this offseason, and they changed the culture, so to speak, this offseason as well, because we know that the Barrio has been around for the last couple of years, and it's been like high school cliques in the dugout with Vladdy and Teoscar and Lourdes on one end and other people on another end and different things like that. They got rid of Teoscar in Seattle. They got rid of Lourdes as well. They brought in people like Kevin Kiermaier, Dalton Barshow, and a couple of different individuals as well, not to mention Chris Bassett. So with that, and with them adding Whit Merrifield last year from the Kansas City Royals, they have a nice balance of intense veterans in that dugout now, along with Kevin Gausman. That I think it makes a great mix for this team. What are your expectations of this team? And do you believe that the same way that I do, that nobody will benefit more from the pitch clock, apparently, than Yusei Kikuchi, because he will not have enough time to overthink between pitches now, and it's really seemed to really help him, at least in spring training.
Yeah, I've heard that a couple times, that the pitch clock is probably going to benefit Kikuchi. Hey, he's had a great spring training. As we both know, as being baseball fans, you can't really put a lot of weight on what happens in spring training, but I do like what I've seen so far. It does seem to be a largely mental game for Yusei, so we'll see once the regular season gets underway. I think being at the back end of the rotation or coming out of the pen or whatever their plan is for him, as long as there's as little pressure as possible, that we might see a decent season. I think you can't really get worse than last season, so hopefully the pressure is off and we can see what changes he's made throughout the offseason. I'm excited about the additions. I would have liked maybe a little bit more of a splash, but I feel like that could happen at trade deadline. You never know. I did expect more movement at the catcher situation, so I think that there's something maybe coming down the pipe throughout the season there. But I love how much emphasis they've put on defensive ball. I mean, the outfield now, you have essentially three true center fielders in George Springer, in Dalton Varshow, in Kevin Kiermaier. This team is going to be so good defensively. I have my own feelings at letting Bo Bichette remain at shortstop. I'm a staunch believer that he should be moved over to second, and I think that we'll continue to see that this year. No discredit to Bo. I think he's an unbelievable player. I think that he is poised to have an unbelievable offensive season this year. But I think we've seen enough from him at short to know that he should be moved and he should be open to that move. But we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful. I'm excited. I hope they can stay healthy. And I think that I don't know that we'll be winning the division, but I think that they'll definitely be a playoff team, and hopefully we'll have better success in the playoffs than last season. I don't need the roller coaster of emotions that we saw in that second game against Seattle again.
What do you think about somebody like Alejandro Kirk? We know that he's coming off an all-star year, and he played out of his mind largely last year for this team and came up clutch time and again. But we also know that there's been a lot of talk so far in his career surrounding Vladimir Guerrero and the fact that Vladimir Guerrero needed to get into shape because he was out of shape and different things like that. Do you believe, as I do, that somebody needs to talk to Alejandro Kirk and say, listen, Alejandro, we appreciate what you're doing with this team and we want you to continue to evolve and everything like that, but you need to change your regimen here and get yourself in a little bit better shape, because I do believe he could be an elite catcher in the league if he decided to, you know, change a few things and different things like that. Because for me, he reminds me of El Guapo, the former reliever for the Boston Red Sox right now, or Mo Vaughn, just in a catching form where it's gonna take a toll on him, or continue to take a toll on him, to be able to play behind the plate and spell off Danny Jansen if he does not get himself in better shape, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
I mean, it's tough. We saw Danny Jansen show up to spring training this year having put on weight, and that was part of his regimen, and he's expected to have a really nice offensive season at the plate too. So it can go both ways. I mean, I have trust in the Jays training staff. Alejandro Kirk had an unbelievable season last year, so if anything, I would argue he's doing something right. So continue to do that. But the only issue I have is that maybe the Jays should have traded him in the offseason, because is his trajectory going to be better than what we saw last year? Or should they have, you know, gone the Oakland A's route of trading him at his peak, which might have been last season? We don't know. And they obviously have a log jam at the catcher position, so they can afford to get rid of something and maybe bring something back. But as far as his conditioning, I don't know what his conditioning is, but he's doing something right, because he had a heck of a year last year.
What would you do in the Matt Chapman situation? Because Matt Chapman is a very strong defensive third baseman, one of the top three in the league, in my opinion, right now, behind Nolan Arenado and maybe one other individual. But he's entering his last year with the Jays. If you are Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, would you look to extend him? Or because you have Addison Barger waiting in the wings, even though he is fairly young, and an Aurelvis Martinez, who you could possibly move over to third if you needed to? Would you look to say, thank you very much for 2 years, see you later kind of thing?
I mean, it depends on how big they want their window to be. Like, I mean, Addison's looked great in spring training. Does that mean he's 100% waiting, ready and waiting? I don't know, but it always helps to have someone that can kind of mentor these young guys as they're coming up. And Matt Chapman is certainly the kind of guy you want to mentor young players. I would love to see an overlap year or two at least. I would be good with an extension. I don't think I'd want anything too long term because he's 29 years old now, I think. So the defense is going to start to go down at some point, and that's largely what he brings to the table. But I'm good with a short term, a 1 or 2 year extension, maybe even 3 years, and then see where it goes. But him knowing that he might get to a point throughout those 3 years where he's going to have to compete for his job at third, and see, is he on board with mentoring kind of the next wave that's coming through and go from there. But I mean, that's the great thing about the Jays right now is they have a lot of young talent ready to come up, and we can all be excited to see that.
I have had a lot of people on the Isolation series, over 260 episodes from all different disciplines in sports and entertainment. And I can fully say that I'm very happy to have you on with us today from an individual who has been in entertainment and sports for a long, long time and had to fight my way to get to where I am in my career because of my wheelchair and things like that. All kidding aside, I want to say that I'm proud of you to be able to do what you've been able to do from when you first started at TSN to where you are now doing the Morning Loop and doing CTV's NFL coverage and all the rest of the stuff that you do. It is something to behold, and you should be very proud of it yourself, because I know that there is still a lot of stigma in this field that we are in. I deal with it at least a couple times a week still on social media and different things like that. So I'm proud of you, like I said, and I'm happy now to call you a friend, whether you want it or not, until I kick your on the golf course, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. That means a lot. I really appreciate it. And I mean, we all have haters online, right? Haters gonna hate. We don't worry about it.
Absolutely. That is Kara Wagland of TSN. Make sure you check her out almost nightly. And when the NFL season starts, make sure you check her out for all the NFL coverage on CTV and TSN. And that's when you're going to hear her out about her Pittsburgh Steelers almost on a weekly basis. But this has been another edition of the Isolation Series for Thursday, March 16th, 2023. And we look forward to coming at you again very soon. But for Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. That is Kara Wagland, and we will see you again soon. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.